Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. You're in for another special treat tonight, so go ahead and smash that thumbs up and subscribe if you're new. We have Entropic Society around the campfire with us. Download your favorite scary story and listen to me on the go wherever you may lie. On my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. I took my son Jared camping a few years ago down in Lake Jennings, which is located in Lakeside, California. It is about a 15-minute drive west of Alpine, which is a small, rural mountain town. Lake Jennings is a wonderful place to camp by tent or by RV, but this story takes place when we went camping there by tent. My wife and daughter stayed behind on this trip, as I wanted to teach my son some survival training to get him ready to go into the Boy Scouts. I grew up being a Boy Scout and loved every moment of it until I discovered driving and girls. Then, my attention steered another direction. My boy was very much interested in the outdoors. Our home sits at the edge of the woods in northern San Diego County, and he's always in the backyard roaming around and getting lost and finding things that he would bring back to the house to show me. This is when I knew it was time to prep the young lad for Boy Scouts, and to do a little bit of training. I also planned on being a parent volunteer as well on their overnight adventures and selling events at the local mall, where they sell things like popcorn and other sorts of goodies, which the funding goes towards the organization. I went a tad off topic. Let's get back to what actually happened. It was only an overnight stay at the campground. I wanted to show him things like setting up a tent, gathering firewood, and how to start a fire using kindling and not using any lighter fluid, etc. I actually gathered some cotton swabs that my wife uses from the bathroom, and some old dryer lint from the laundry room, placing them all in a small Ziploc bag along with some Vaseline as it's very flammable. Before you judge me, just know I used what I had at the time, and my son was only 6 back then. Once we arrived at the campsite and found the lot and parked, I unpacked all of our belongings and started showing my son how to set up the tent, which ended up taking around 40 minutes, give or take. Then we set up everything regarding food and snacks and drinks on the picnic table and bench. Of course, I had the fishing poles out too with my tackle box, to teach my young man a thing or two about fishing. We were, after all, at the lake, so that went without saying. The first order of business after setting up our shelter was breakfast. By preparing breakfast, it would give me the chance to show Jared how to light a fire. We crouched together over the area designated for fires, and I set down the small twigs and kindling to birth the flame. Jared stared intently as I worked and explained the process to him. I could almost see cogs turning in his head as he listened to me. I could tell you he was taking this very seriously, and the delight on his face made me smile when I told him that I would be relying on him to make the fire later for us to make our next meal. Once the fire was going, I set 2 pans down to make eggs and warm up the beans. Quick, easy, and convenient if you ask me. We scuffed the meal down in silence, both of us in awe and admiration at the sounds of the great outdoors, the rustling of the trees, the fresh gusts of wind, and of course the chirping of the vast number of birds flying around. The air itself seemed infinitely purer than the air we had to breathe in the city. Breaks like these really made you appreciate the beauty of nature. Bellies full and spirits high, I told Jared we best get some fishing in before the day progressed any further. It's not good fishing in the blaring sun, and also, it would be good to have your next meal ready to cook, in the setting of surviving out here. We carried the fishing poles and tackle boxes and made our way to the edge of the water. The crystal clear water was jaw-dropping, with the sun and sky looking down to give the vast water the illusion of color. We settled down, took out the bait, and I carefully showed Jared how to set up his pole. My heart beamed with pride as my son effortlessly prepared his pole, just as I had done. I taught him to cast, and once again, he did it seamlessly. I couldn't resist, and gently tousled his hair and smiled lovingly at him. He smiled back, and I could see the comfort and enjoyment on his face. Jared didn't need me to tell him that silence was imperative, so we sat in silence once again, side by side. We had an ice box filled with ice cubes, and before long, I had caught a pretty decent-sized fish. "Well, lunch is sorted," I said to Jared. "Hopefully you manage to catch us some dinner," I told him.
"What happens if we don't catch any more fish, Dad?" he asked me quietly.
"Unfortunately, we won't eat dinner then," I told him jokingly. The despair on his face made my heart ache, and I had to tell him that it was a joke, and we had more than enough food brought from home to survive. This seemed to soothe him, and he settled back down once again to continue his leisurely fishing. Soon enough, I had caught a couple more fish and added them to the icebox. No sooner that I had set the lid back on, did I hear my son shrieking with excitement.
"I got one, Dad! I got one!"
he shouted with pure bliss you only find in the innocent. There on his pole was the smallest fish you had ever seen. He was absolutely jubilant at his victory. "Hold your pole up, let me take a picture," I told him proudly. Fish squirming in the air, he held the pole and I snapped a picture on my phone. Usually, I would release the smaller fish back into the water, but I couldn't bring myself to release the fish he had caught. I figured, what harm would keeping one fish do? With the fix in the icebox and smiles on our faces, we set back off towards the campsite. Once we arrived, I showed Jared how to gut and prepare the fish for when we cooked it later. Luckily, my boy wasn't squeamish. He didn't look away at all, even when the fish guts had plastered the tree stump I was cleaning them on. The rest of the day was as perfect as the morning had been. I showed Jared how to set traps and catch small animals, of which we let them go, but I wanted him to know how to set them. He had learned this as quickly as he did everything else that I had taught him, and I couldn't have been prouder. Night soon fell, and it was time for his big test. We huddled together as we did in the morning, and Jared put together everything he needed to build the fire. It took him a couple of tries, but eventually, I saw the spark and the kindling caught ablaze. I think I was more excited for this than he was, and I once again felt the unshakable feeling of being a proud dad. Once the fire was going and the fish was cooking, we sat staring into the flames, silence shared by us, listening to nature. This time, I noticed a difference from the morning. It was silent around us. There were no sounds coming from the trees, no calls of animals. There was not even a breath of wind. The silence made me feel uneasy, and so I asked Jared if he had enjoyed the day's activities. We reflected on the day and laughed together while the food cooked, and I soon felt the unease dissipate. Before I knew it, the fish were ready, and we thoroughly enjoyed the food we had caught with our very own hands. Well, with the fishing pole, too. Our bellies were once again full, and we sat admiring our surroundings. It was only then that I heard a sound. The deafening silence was broken by an even louder noise of something moving amongst the trees and snapping branches. The sudden sound frightened me, and it obviously did Jared, as he asked me with a shaking voice,
"What was that, Dad?"
Not knowing for sure, but realizing that it must have been something big and heavy with the incredible speed, I told Jared to relax, and there are many animals found out here, so there is no need to panic. I knew there was a ranger's office about 15 minutes away. The path to the car wasn't treacherous, and so we could easily navigate it with our flashlights. Once in the car park, it was but a short walk to the ranger's.
"Dad, I'm scared,"
Jared said to me. I could not tell my son that I was scared too, and so I calmly suggested that we return to the car for his peace of mind.
"What about our tent, Dad?" he asked me. "Don't worry about the tent. We could come back and get everything in the morning," I told Jared. The feeling of unease had not only returned, but had turned into unadulterated fear. "Forget the tents. We could drive back tomorrow in the day and collect them." I took my son's hand and walked with him onto the path to take us home. Those eyes. Those red demon eyes. As I turned back to look at our campsite, I saw them. Hidden in the thicket of trees, they burned brightly in the darkness. I could not make out a shape, but I could see those ungodly red eyes. Panic took over me, and I picked my son up and ran. I couldn't bring myself to look back. I just ran as fast as my adrenaline-fueled body would run. I could hear whatever that thing was in the trees surrounding us. Between the thumping in my chest and the thuds of my feet, I couldn't distinguish where the sound was coming from. As I made my way down the path, the red eyes once again materialized, this time in the trees ahead of me. I was nearly through into the car park. I pushed myself even harder to get just a little bit more speed. The darkness around me seemed to close in as my flashlight bounced with my stride. Would the darkness completely envelop us and leave us helpless? As my thoughts began to run away from me, I realized I had started screaming. Jared was crying in my arms, obviously aware something was gravely wrong. I screamed at the top of my lungs, imploring for someone, maybe even a higher power, to save us. We bursted from the trail into the car park. It was not hard to spot our car, as it was the only car that remained. I looked back, my stomach dropping, and expected the red eyes to be behind me. The darkness looked back at me. There was nothing. "I'm going to get the ranger. Stay sitting on the floor of the car and don't get up until you hear my voice," I told Jared, my voice trembling.
"No, Dad, please don't leave me alone," came his desperate plea.
I figured if Jared stayed hidden in the car and I continued on to the rangers while screaming, whatever was attached to those haunting red eyes would follow me and leave Jared alone. I think Jared knew how grave and serious the situation was, as he didn't say anything else as I opened the car and lowered him in, covering him with jackets we had left in the vehicle. With tears in my eyes, full of fear, I continued running. I could hear the creature now. A low, deep snarl came from the trees around me. It kept pace with me, almost mocking me that my absolute fastest speed was nothing to it. I screamed as loud as I could, praying to myself. I just hoped that even if this creature attacked me, it would leave Jared alone. My screams must have been heard as my lone flashlight was soon met by another beam.
"Hey, what's going on?"
shouted a sturdy voice not far in front of me. I had made it to the ranger.
"Help! I saw these red eyes at our campsite and ran here to get you. I don't know what kind of creature it is, but I don't know what else to do,"
I sobbed to the man.
"Have you been drinking, sir?"
he asked, concerned.
"And is there anybody else with you?"
I explained to him that I was as sober as could be, and begged him to come to my car as my boy was waiting there for me. The ranger walked towards me, the barrel of his shotgun glistening in the light of my flashlight.
"I'll escort you back to the vehicle, sir,"
he assured me. The red eyes seemed to have disappeared after taunting me. As we walked down the path, I felt my breathing start to return to normal. I was feeling immensely more comfortable, knowing that this expert of the outdoors was accompanying me, most importantly with the weapon to defend us. He didn't speak, and I was more than happy to walk in silence. We approached the clearing and led to the car park, and as we broached the trees, my blood ran cold. I couldn't move. The deafening crack of the rifle brought me back to reality, and I felt my legs give out on me.
What the hell is that?
The ranger screamed at me, firing a second shot towards the red eyes. Except this time, it was not just the red eyes. I could see the owner of the eyes. It stood taller than any man I had ever seen, with thick fur covering its entire body. The car park lights shone onto the creature, but it looked like the lights were sucked in by the evil. It turned to us, hardly fazed by the shots directed at it. And that's when I saw my son. The creature was holding him by the legs, and they were both covered in blood. The dim light illuminated his body enough to see that his arms had been torn off his body, and the blood poured from the stumps where they once been. His head lollied about with every movement the red-eyed devil made. His eyes glared at me, seemingly blaming me for what had happened. Blood seeping from its mouth and nose, his throat had been ripped open, and I could see it was not even held together by much. This thing had nearly decapitated my poor boy. There was so much blood. I had never seen so much blood in my life. I couldn't protect my boy. I thought I was doing the right thing by drawing the red eyes towards me. How wrong I was. My son had been torn apart, and there was nothing I could do about it. The scream the creature let loose sounded somewhat human, but more like a mass of tortured people screaming in unison. I don't know why the beast left us alive. I question why it ran off with the remains of my boy. When the police and journalist arrived, there was nothing but the destroyed vehicle and blood that had been sprayed all over, draining the life from Jared. The police took our statements and launched a search for the body and what they insisted must have been a wolf. My wife and daughter were beside themselves. They blamed me for Jared's death. They left me and moved to England to be with my wife's family. I don't blame them. Now I sit and drink to not feel anything, to not remember anything. Nobody believes us. But we know what we saw. I still see those damned red eyes in my dreams.
I was hired about 12 years ago to trap and hunt these wild hogs that has been plaguing this farmer's land for quite some time. If you know anything about hogs, is that they can get quite big, and they're very aggressive. What I would typically do, and what I've done in the past, is I'd set up random traps around the property. These traps would basically be a circular fence about 30 feet in diameter. The fence would have a gate that would close shut after a certain amount of hogs would be in the trap. I set up three traps like this on the property, in order to maximize what I could catch. I set up my traps and I waited through the night to see what I would catch. The next morning I took my horse out and checked the traps. The first two were empty. The last trap had about 7 hogs in it, all of which were pretty good size. I didn't do anything with the last trap, and I left the hogs alone. In order for me to reset the trap, I'd have to kill all of the hogs, haul them out of there, and reset it. I would not be able to haul all of the hogs out with just my horse. I'd need my truck for that. I rode my horse back, dropped it off, and picked up my truck, and went out for the third trap. Upon arriving to the third trap, the hogs were in a frenzy. Something must have stirred them up while I was gone. I noticed that some of the hogs were injured and had blood on them. This wasn't necessarily surprising. Hogs would not only injure, but also kill and eat other hogs, if given the chance. But upon counting the hogs, I noticed that 2 of them had gone missing. Instead of 7 hogs, there were only 5. My only conclusion was that I either miscounted, or 2 of them had escaped. At this point, it didn't even cross my mind that something had taken them. The only animal that I could think of that could do that was maybe a bear, which we weren't in bear country, so I figured that I just miscounted. I killed the 5 hogs, reloaded the trap, and loaded the hogs back into my truck. I had a special ramp on the back of my truck bed that I'd use to pull the hogs into. Some of these hogs weighed 200 pounds, and there's no way I could do this by myself unless I had a ramp. I drove back and checked the other two traps before calling it a day. To be honest, I was kind of confused about the two missing hogs. Did I really miscount? I can understand if it was 20 or 30 hogs, but 7? 7 isn't that high of a number. At this point, my common sense told me that these two hogs just slipped away, and that was that. The next day came and I checked the traps again on horseback. The first two traps had hogs in them, which was really good news. The first one only had 4, while the second one had 12. What this meant was that the hogs were being drawn out from the woods, coming closer and closer to my traps, and falling for it. This made my job a lot easier. I went and checked my third and final trap, the trap that was the deepest in the woods, and to my surprise, there weren't any hogs inside of it. I was quite surprised that there weren't any hogs in this trap. If there were to be a trap that had hogs in it, it'd be this one. After quickly inspecting the trap, I noticed that the trap had shut, meaning something had triggered it, but there weren't any hogs inside. When I went to reset the trap, I noticed bits and pieces of hogs all over the inside of the trap. Normally, when hogs eat one another, there's a remaining hog standing, a last survivor. What had eaten these hogs, and more importantly, how did it get out of the trap? The trap's fence was about 7 feet tall, even tall for me. Granted, the fence was chain-linked, meaning that I could climb out of it, but I don't know of any animal that could do that. Some animal jumping 7 feet that lives in America doesn't sound realistic. Again, I was confused about this third trap, but then again I just reset the trap and went about my day. The third day came and I checked the traps again. The first two traps in total had 20 hogs. I was quite anxious to see what the third trap would have. For a second day in a row, the trap had been closed, but there were no hogs inside. Again, there were bits and pieces of hogs that remained, but no live ones. Something must have been eating them. I checked the inside of the traps for tracks of any kind, but the hogs' footprints had damaged the soil too much that I couldn't see anything. It finally clicked in my mind that it was probably a cougar, a large one. I asked the farmer for permission to hunt the cougar at night, which he agreed. He didn't want the cougar eating any of his livestock. I reset all three traps, and I waited for nightfall. Cougars are nocturnal animals, for the most part, and like to hunt at night. I decided that riding my horse out would be the best option. My truck would be too distracting and would scare off the cougar. I waited till 1 a.m. to go hunting. This would give my traps enough time to catch some hogs, which would be perfect bait for this cougar. 1 a.m. came around, and I took off on horseback. All I brought with me was my rifle and a heavy-duty flashlight. This was before the time of smartphones, and I obviously didn't own any night vision goggles. Looking back, this was really dumb. At the very least, I should have at least brought someone with me. But I didn't. I rode past the first two traps and on my way to the third one, when I started to hear the sounds of wild hogs squealing. I knew that I was right on time to catch the cougar in the act. I quickly rode out to the third trap, flashlight in hand. When I first arrived at the trap, I didn't know what I was looking at. All I saw were wild hogs running around crazily inside the trap. However, I did notice something very large inside that didn't look like a hog. Instead of pulling out my rifle, I just sat there, looking at what kind of creature was inside this trap. My flashlight must have caught the creature's attention, and it stopped what it was doing and stood up. The best way I could describe it was that it was like a dog, but also human at the same time. Its features resembled that of a werewolf or a very large dog standing on two legs, and I was completely terrified. My horse, being confused and frightened, took off back the way we came. I could see now that the creature was ignoring the hogs, and its attention was on us. I heard the sound of something jumping over a fence and giving chase behind us. I urged my horse to run faster, but it was too slow for this thing. The creature made a couple swipes at my horse, which my horse reacted in pain. My horse had significantly slowed, and the creature was able to gain. The creature tackled the horse from behind, causing me to be bucked off. My horse and my rifle were now in the clutches of this large beast. The beast was now eating my horse, and I had no choice but to run. Thankfully, I wasn't too far away, and I was able to make it back safely. The creature seemed to be pretty satisfied with my horse, and thankfully it didn't chase me. If it did, I would not be able to be here today, telling you my story.